Talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And we're back with an old PS You're Wrong staple, the double episode. We love a double episode. Well, actually, we don't really that
I know.
Much. I feel like we don't do them nearly enough if we could.
It's hard to know. Well, because there's no rhyme or reason. It's not like we're doing... Like, we didn't even do Barbieheimer. You know, like, we only do it when both movies are so bad we're kind of, like, dreading talking about it.
Well, and this is like, we were supposed to do an episode on Toy Story 5 last week, which I feel like we definitely need to talk about. Mm-hmm. But then due to various scheduling forces, because we are both very, you know, sort of like social. Busy, highly sought after individuals, that we had to, we couldn't record. But then we were going to do Supergirl this week, which I feel like we also needed to talk about. So, you know, we're now doing Toy Story 5 and Supergirl in one fell swoop.
Yeah. Yeah, we're juggling what the people need, what the people want. And I also did just want to touch base because we didn't get to do a pop culture roundup this week. But this is also added to the agenda, if you don't mind. The Taylor Swift MSG.
Oh, wedding. Yes. Well, yes, of course. We must discuss.
I'm just like, I was on record saying this is clearly a joke. Like, this is clearly a lie. Like, this is if anything, it's planted so that they can distract the people from where the actual wedding will be. But this week, New York Times reported on it.
Yes.
Of record, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's tripping over themselves to like explain why. And it's like, I can't tell if I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid or if it is like a logically sound argument. But I just like, I can't wrap my head around like how tacky it feels. And like, yeah, she has money to like decorate it, but it's still like an arena, you know?
Yeah, I was. So the information that's come out from the New York Times is basically like, there is an event there, like because of zoning ordinances or whatever, like there is an event scheduled there for that day that is like a private event. Also, there's like roads that are being shut down around there. So,
yeah,
it's like there's something happening.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's the rumors that the wedding is going to be there. So it's like, okay, this makes sense. But I couldn't help but think about the time. You'll maybe remember this better than I did. But remember there was like a book deal of some sort that they thought that Taylor Swift was writing. And they had like pulled all of this information from different like publishing places and like paper stockyards and whatever.
The Argyle.
Oh, yes. That she had like written the book for Argyle or something. Yes. Yeah. And then it was like, oh no, like there was like a BTS like coffee table book or something that was coming out at the same time. So I was sort of like, I wonder if this is like, there's some sort of like Knicks event that's going to be there that day, but we all think it's going to be a Taylor Swift thing.
I know.
But like, I think it does make like, I feel like in the mind of Taylor Swift, this does make sense because it's a highly secure environment that you can get in and out of. Yeah. It's a place that's very unique. Like, it's not like anyone else has really had a wedding there that we are aware of. And also because she's a musician, like, it is a venue that matters to her because, you know, she has played there and that is like the most sort of iconic music venue in the United States, I guess. So I can see how that would work. My question is, okay, you've rented out Madison Square Garden. Great. I feel like there's two options for like decorating it. Mm-hmm. You could A, like build something within it, which at that point, so it's like you don't see all of the empty seats and whatever, in which case it's like, well, why? Like, because then you're basically just building a set someplace and you could be married in any warehouse. Mm-hmm. Or you don't do that, in which case you then have all of these empty seats and mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you know, like you can sort of see like the empty concession stands in yeah. whatever because you just have a group of a couple hundred people on the floor. I would assume
that. Well, supposedly 1,000 people.
Okay, but even still, I think that's just the floor, no?
Yeah, yeah, like, no, that would be small.
Like, you wouldn't need to sit people in the stands yeah. for that, I guess. I mean, maybe they could sort of rig something up so there's, like, a section of it, and she, like, walks right. down, like, the stairs yeah. or whatever, and, like, yeah. Maybe.
Well, supposedly there's, like, a stage being built. Like, that's another rumor, is, like, there's some sort of thing.
And she's getting, like, getting married on a stage of some kind.
Yeah. And it's, like, yeah, I think... If I'm like logically thinking through it, it's like, okay, every guest, every caterer, every florist can enter through the underground tunnel right. and not be seen at all. Right. And Taylor Swift was mobbed at Jack Antonoff's wedding. And like that, you know, the idea of how people will behave with her wedding specifically is also probably pretty alarming. And she's like spoken about her fears of like, you know, violence and all this. So okay, yeah, MSG is like safe, but it also is like, okay, 1,000 people in this arena, like what are we doing? Like what is it? Like what's the vibe? What's the aesthetic? Because I do feel like it'll just be, she builds out a room and is just using MSG for the security of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is sort of like another thing. Yeah, like that you like build a church within Madison Square Garden yeah. because of the security of yeah. it all. But then, like, is the reception also in Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, right? I mean,
and then,
I guess.
Like, where would that be exactly? Like, also on the floor? Or is that, like, yeah. in one of the hallways or something? Yeah. Like, I do have so many questions. And I am so fascinated so by this. But at the same time, like, I think this is what's happening. Because yeah. Travis Kelce's training period or whatever starts soon. Yeah. Like the football season isn't that far away. So she has to be getting married soon. Oh, also, yeah. there's lots of rumors about that going around. And if you're inviting 1,000 people, it's like somebody's yeah. assistant or whatever, like has this information and is putting it out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know, especially if it's 1,000 people, like I think we would have heard a second option at this point if this was all like a decoy, you right. know? Like yeah, if it was like, yeah, oh, yeah. Madison Square Garden's a decoy, we're actually getting married in Rhode Island. Yeah, it feels yeah. like somebody, like we would yeah. have known something.
I know.
And we got the people checking out into the Marriott Marquis. So, you know, that's my favorite part of this whole thing is that these football players who could have stayed at any hotel in all of New York and they're like, oh, yes, the Marriott Marquis. Yeah. Like noted tourist hotel.
They want to be seen and they know they're going to be funneled into this secret tunnel where their phones will be confiscated and no one will ever know what it looked like.
Right.
What it was well, like.
I mean, they're definitely going to be selling photos of this to some.
I mean, I hope. I love.
Or posting them on Instagram yeah. or something.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Maybe they'll do like a Vogue wedding shoot or
maybe
something.
Maybe they'll do like a mini documentary.
I mean, that could very well be a thing.
Maybe she'll walk down the aisle to her lead single, I Knew It, I Knew You, and that will be the start of her Oscar campaign.
Of her Oscar campaign, yes. I guess let's get into Toy Story 5.
Yeah, that's called a segue. I'm really good at them at this point.
Beautiful segue, Shelby.
Thank you.
How did you feel about the song?
You know what? I did like it. I did. I have also been on record saying that I want Taylor's debut. I feel like I've been thirsty for some of that pop country she, you know, that was part of my childhood. And I feel like this was a fun song. It was sweet. It was cute. It was nostalgic for like the original, well, Toy Story 2. And I feel like it was enjoyable for me. It was a breath of fresh air after The Life of a Showgirl, which I did not feel
which
attached.
Nobody really likes.
Well, that's not true. There are some diehards still to this day, and I respect people's love of art as they need it. But it wasn't serving me. And this song was like, oh, okay, yeah, she's still got something that I like I'm drawn to. But what about you? Because you hadn't heard it until the movie, right?
Yeah, I didn't hear it until the movie. I thought it, I liked it more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
I think when you think about like credit songs and especially like Oscar baity sort of songs, mm-hmm. they're often these kind of like ballad sort of things. Yeah. And this was a little bit more jaunty and upbeat. And I mm-hmm. liked it, especially when you compare it to the other Jesse song, the Sarah yeah. McLachlan one from the second movie, which is so sad. Yeah. This was a lot of fun, I thought. And it's hard for me to get, like, it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100, but in the age of streaming, it's really confusing to me whether that means that there's any sort of cultural cachet or not. Because, like, obviously a bunch of people went to listen to it right when it came out. It is a Taylor Swift song, but, yeah. like, are people playing this on the radio? Like, is this a song that people will know?
I heard it in Target.
Okay. Okay. Well, that is something.
So it made whatever feeds that. That's a playlist.
And I guess it is a country song, so it'll probably play on the country. Yeah. But like Golden, I feel like has become like ubiquitous. Like you hear that everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever it comes on, because the beginning of Golden doesn't really sound like the rest of Golden, I'm like, what is this song?
Like,
I sort
of like this.
And then it starts and I'm like, oh, it's Golden. Oh, of course, this is what it is. But I don't, yeah, I am interested. She's obviously going to campaign this hard. There are other songs, obviously, and there'll be a whole slew of them that theoretically come out in the fall.
It's so a hard sell. I think it is. Because usually the winners are the depressing, like, soul-crushing.
Or the Golden one.
Golden one, but that was also, like, what was it competing against?
Right. Yeah, I mean, Sinners, I guess.
But I guess there hasn't been any good.
I think the question is more, how does the Academy feel about Taylor than is this a good song or not? Like, I think if this blows up and becomes like some massive, massive hit, which I don't think it is going to, then that could be its own thing. I think it will get nominated. I don't think it will win.
Yeah, I mean,
because I think it will get nominated and then she'll come to the Oscars and she'll perform it, which will be a big thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure the Academy wants to give her an Oscar.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, yeah, I'd have to see what it's up against, but it does feel very like, I don't know. I mean, that's probably just the prestige-y judgmental, like, oh, it has to be serious type. So who knows? It could be. In the running.
How did you feel about the movie as a whole, though?
Toy Story 5, yeah. So,
and what did Penny think about it? Give us the whole Penny's experience with the entire. Yeah.
Well, I have her quote. She wrote it down for me. She said, "Mid, no, I." We did Toy Story 4, which we both were like pretty. Like, I couldn't even tell you. There's something about Woody getting lost with Forky. Like, it was fine.
They were, like, in an antique shop or something, I want to say.
Yeah, it was just, like, the worst, for sure. And then it was like, oh, well, at least it's over now, because they were all like, this is the end. This is Woody's end. And then a year later, it's like, actually, we have another one cooking. So my expectations were low. I feel like Toy Story 5 was better than Toy Story 4. I liked elements of it, and I think the last half hour was excellent, but it was quite the slog to get through to that point. Because, like, it follows Jessie more. Yay, yes. Girl power. Jessie is Bonnie's lead toy. Bonnie is 9 or 10 or 11 or something nebulous at this point.
Because she kind of looks like she's 5.
She looks like she's 5. But she was 5 in Toy Story 3. Toy Story 4, I think, marks her at like 6. And then this is like a 4-year. I don't know. Someone did the timeline. Technically, I think this movie is set in like 2010. But I don't know if Toy Story is like, if the franchisees are following that, or they're just kind of going along with the now. But yeah, so Bonnie's the toy, the girl. She's shy. She wants to make real friends who want to play with her. But everyone's into their iPad babies, their tablet heads, their
lily pads.
Yeah, they're dead-eyed, incapable of communicating with each other, and that makes it doubly hard for someone who's too scared to ask someone to play. Mm-hmm. And so the parents, who are probably, you know, in the running for some of the worst Pixar parents to date, are like, we'll get her an iPad.
Always a good move.
And they get her an iPad, completely uncontrolled, access to a group chat, and some sort of like community board where she can post a photo of her toys to the world.
The tech elements of this movie we will have to get into separately because they make zero sense.
Sorry, I was supposed to answer my reaction to it. It was like, I think it's franchise fatigue is real. I think it's hard to capture that magic again. I was surprised by how they were able to stick the landing in the emotional component of that final act. But I do feel like they are just slogging it through the mud of their own like hubris at this point to make any sort of original concept.
But so like, does Toy Story have cachet for Penny? Like, has she seen the other movies?
Yeah. She's seen all of them. Okay. I don't think she like remembers all of them, you know, because
once do kids like Toy Story?
I think so. I mean, okay. It's like she knows, she was like, saw the billboard and she's like, oh, it's Woody. Is there a new movie? Like, you know, she's very
okay
into ads that she can see herself going to the theater for.
Okay.
So I think they're like aware of it. Like, I feel like there were a ton of kids like in the theater, you know?
I mean, it's made a ton of money. So
yeah. And I feel like you have the millennials who now have their kids who are the age to see them. So they're introducing them to the Toy Story 2 and the Toy Story 3 of it all. I feel like it's not like pulling out, I don't know, Sword in the Stone and being like, here's a sequel. Like, yes. You know, I feel like there is cachet and it's linked to the original in a way that something like Lion King isn't, because now I think more people have seen the quote unquote live action than the original, and they are attached to that in a way. Whereas Toy Story, it's kept the same design, the same voices, the same storyline. So I do feel like it's an established franchise that doesn't feel like a stretch that they keep trying to milk it for more.
Yeah. I think it is a weird sort of franchise because obviously the first three movies were so well done. Everybody loves them. The third one feels like it's a real like fitting conclusion. Yeah. And then there was a big gap between 3 and 4. So I think people kind of assumed that they were done. And then it was like, oh no, surprise, a fourth one's coming, which just felt like it wasn't about anything really. Yeah. And this fifth one, I think when I saw the advertisements for it, which were very heavy on the iPad of it all, of like, oh, devices and how kids deal with that, I was like, okay, this feels like an interesting thing for Toy Story to tackle and a reason to make a movie. Because, it's like, do kids play with toys anymore? Or are they mostly playing on their iPad or video games or whatever? You know, it's like in school, everybody has a iPad. They're not like, you know, passing out worksheets and stuff like they did when we were going to school. So I was like interested in that. And I thought, oh, maybe like Toy Story will have something really fascinating to say about that. It kind of felt like to me that it didn't. Like they get this iPad or lily pad for Bonnie. And then she becomes like a tech zombie who's obsessed with it. And the toys are trying to figure out how they can get rid of the iPad, basically. And so then the iPad's trying to get rid of the toys. So it's like sort of this battle for Bonnie's mind as to whether or not they should, you know, the iPad should be doing anything. But then it ultimately sort of comes to a conclusion of, oh, well, she's going to play with the iPad, but then she's also going to play with the regular toys and sort of like integrate them all into one thing, which I do think is probably like how it works in real life. And like the goal that we sort of would have for children that they can play with both, because I don't think it's realistic to end with a like, oh, and the iPad's in the trash can and we're only doing, you know, we're only playing with action figures now. But I thought it had this really weird idea at the center of it, that Bonnie and then this other girl, Blaze, are like weird kids because they like playing with toys, and like how normal kids just like playing with their iPads, but these two girls are kind of quirky and they're special because they are interested in toys as well and really would rather be playing with toys than with iPad. And so if they can connect to one another, then they can know, oh, there's other people in the world who like playing with toys as well, which is just so strange to me as a concept of like, the only people who like playing with toys and using their imagination are sort of like weird people, and we should like foster that weirdness, but also just like leave the rest of the kids as zombies.
No, because it ends with the other kids across the street seeing how fun they're, how much fun they're having, and they come too. So the idea is if you hold on to that magic, like it will spread.
Yes, but I wanted like more of a anti-technology bent to it.
Well, they couldn't be too anti-tech because they have a lily pad with LeapFrog that they're selling.
Well, right. And also they are a tech company.
Yeah.
So there's a conflict of interest here.
It was giving
sort of Barbie energy a little bit of like, I don't like, there's some conflicting interest going on here between these organizations.
Yeah.
I was a little bit like, I mean, I, again, like you're a parent, I'm not a parent, so I don't know. And I'm not interacting with elementary age kids all the time. So I don't know what the different schools of thought with parents are about, like, oh, should they have a time limit? Should they not have a time limit? Whatever. But these parents went from like not wanting their kid to have an iPad to all of a sudden being
on what's it called? What is that word? Not patrolled, but like, yeah, they were not engaging with how to have a healthy relationship with that tech at all. Yeah, I felt like the unfiltered access was weird, but then also how they responded to their like the clear changes Bonnie was going through.
Yes.
Like she's suddenly not capable of like not being on her iPad. I feel like that would be a flag. But then also and we can talk about the plot because it gets very convoluted, but basically so basically you have Jessie who's like, I need her to find a friend. That's her main mission.
Well, because before we even get to that, there's at the end of the fourth movie, Woody like is left with his roving group of toys and appoints Jessie the sheriff.
Right.
So she's actually like the highest ranking toy now over Buzz.
Buzz, yeah.
And Buzz is in love with Jessie. Was that a plot of the fourth one?
Yeah, it was like hinted at.
I was like,
but it's like the same thing as like Bo Peep and Woody, where it's like there might be some flirtation there for the older audience, but it's never like but I feel like that was another weird thing where it's like very heavy on like, not only does Buzz love Jessie, but he like wants to marry her, and I'm like, I don't know if we need this for like toys, you know, like they're like toys that are presumably like kids. I don't know. I guess Woody's like a grown up. I don't know. It was weird. It was unnecessary to me. But that becomes Buzz one and only thing is he's trying to get to Jessie to tell her that he loves her. But then on top of that, you also have the movie opening with a shipment, a carrier crashing into the ocean, Wild Robot style, full of Buzzes, who you then follow throughout the movie as they like try to find Space Command because they're, again, toys who don't realize they're toys for a minute. Mm-hmm. And so throughout the film, you're getting peppered with these, like, them journeying to this star and then somehow, you know, projecting onto Jesse as their like leader or whatever. Because she has this power.
Yes, because it's Star Command.
Yeah.
So they're
like,
oh, we got to find Star Command.
Yeah.
But so Lily, I'm like, this movie is so convoluted.
It's too much. Yeah.
It was giving Frozen 2 in its so many plot lines. Because Jesse is like, I'm like, I don't even know.
Jesse's mission is we have to find a real life friend for Bonnie.
And
through this, she accidentally gets thrown away because she was going to go to a sleepover.
And that's right.
So she's lost for the movie. She's on her own with her horse. Then you have Buzz and the other classic toys who have no screen time because most of the voice actors are
dead.
R.I.P. Yeah. And so Buzz is there and he's fighting Lilypad because he's like, one, we have to find Jesse, but also you're bad for Bonnie. Woody comes back and his mission becomes, we have to kill this tech. Buzz is like, but we also have to find Jesse. And the other toys are thrown in a box because, again, the parent is the worst dad alive. And he has no follow-up questions to his daughter being like, put the toys in the garage. And
the daughter who's not even like that. The lily pad sends a message herself.
Yeah, it's she's like, texting her father instructions.
Crazy to think about like sentient tech objects just like sending out whatever messages
that's feel what like we're facing people. Okay, we're one step away from ChatGPT just sending just text
like,
for you
just being assuming. Like I think they might have a crush on this person. Let me shoot off a UFO.
Literally we should all be scared.
But Jesse on the inside of her like boot covering has the address to an owner, two owners ago, Emily, because now she's with Bonnie and she was with Andy, but now before that it was Emily. So she gets dropped off at this house that Emily used to live at.
Correct.
That now this family with a daughter named Blaze lives at.
A
horse girl. And I could only think about Blaze Pizza, the pizza shop, every it's time they said her name. I was like, what is this name? Like,
I will say her pig was very cute.
Oh, I did love the pig. Yes.
The pig was very cute. I could have done with more of that, less of Buzz. And Blaze was cute.
And so then Jesse is like, finds Blaze's old toys that are in a toy shed thing outside. And those toys include like older electronics, sort of from like the early, like, I don't know, 2000s, when you had toys that were like kind of electronic, but like really.
And so
one of them is like an old like digital camera-esque toy, and one of them is a potty GPS. Training device, and then there's also a GPS. And so the potty training device miraculously can be connected to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And so Jesse is using the potty training device to communicate with the lily pad to try to get a meetup of Bonnie and Blaze, because she just knows that because they're both weird, they're gonna be friends because they like playing with toys, which is just weird. And so there's just all this time trying to orchestrate this play date between the two of them, but then also like reconnect the 900 toys that are in this movie, because this is one thing I hated about this movie. They have every movie they introduce another 10 new toys, and then they have kept them all.
Yeah.
So the group of toys that are in Bonnie's room, there's like 40 characters, and I can't remember like the ones from that were added in Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 4, who then get no screen time in this one but are around. And I'm like, what they need to do is just get rid of all of the new toys that have come in 3, 4, and 5. Like, basically, I'd want a Toy Story movie. Mm-hmm. I want a conclusion to the Toy Story franchise that is, like, an actual ending movie that has something interesting to say that mostly is just focused on the old school toys. And I don't care that we have new voice actors for some of these. It's like, I would rather a movie that is like, okay, here's T-Rex with a new voice actor or somebody doing an impression of the old T-Rex voice actor than, oh, here's a movie where T-Rex has one line and then we have to spend all of this time with this potty training device voiced by some new person.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it kind of is illogical because I'm sorry. I, as a parent, would have thrown Forky away the instant she wasn't looking. You know what I mean? Like, that's literal garbage. And now she has two of them and she's 10 years old and she's playing with Forky. Like, that's a developmental question mark for me.
Well, because she's weird, Chelby. You wouldn't get it. Yeah,
but be weird with your, you know, dolls. I don't know. But yeah, it was all too messy. And I think every critic realized that. Every critic called it out. But I do feel like, especially compared to Toy Story 4, like this at least had a place where it ended up that felt more reminiscent of those sort of like life lessons, like remember to have fun. And the buzz reveal of like the drones was truly like goosebump inducing, because it's like that's fun, that makes sense of like where it would go, and it was goofy enough that it like it really punched some energy back into the film. And then you have the like the relief of Jessie. I don't know, she like, it all just worked in the end, but I think they could have really streamlined it a lot better than they did.
Yeah, I liked it fine. It was better than Toy Story 4, but I didn't think it was great. I'm sort of a little surprised that there weren't more reviews that were negative. It has a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 73% on Metacritic, which I think that is makes more sense to me, like a 73. But I'm shocked that there weren't more reviews that are like, why are we doing this? Like, there's no reason for this movie. This movie isn't really saying anything.
And it's the most expensive Pixar movie to date. It's like, what are we doing here? Why?
Well, I mean, it's made a lot of money. So obviously, like, they knew what they were up to. And that this would do well. Like, children's movies usually do well, especially if they're a part of, like, a positive franchise. I mean, it takes a lot for a children's movie to not do well if it's part of a established franchise, because obviously kids are not as picky as adults when it comes to quality. They really have to be tired of something in order for it not to
I mean, hit. We have Minions number 27 coming out, and I don't know why.
Although, supposedly, this Minions is supposed to be good from what people have been telling me. So I'm like, intrigued.
This could be the one, the breakthrough.
I don't, like, I've lost the plot on the Minions movies. Like, I think there's a plot? Well, it's like, I think I've seen all three of the Despicable Me movies, and I remember liking at least the first two of those. But then I don't know how the Minions movies fit in, and I can't remember if I've seen any of the Minions movies or if I've just seen Despicable Me movies and, like, it's confusing to me, but
That's a spot for me. But no, I feel like, can I say something brave but controversial?
Yes, please do.
I don't like Jessie. I'm sorry. I find her voice very irritating, and that's all respect to Joan, you know, like that's my girl. Like,
yes, I do love Joan Cusack,
but Jessie, it's a lot. It's a lot of Jessie.
It's a lot of Jessie.
And not having fun.
Yes. It's like, and it's sort of weird because the plot line that they are using for Jessie is similar to the plot line of Toy Story 2. Which I'm kind of like, okay, if we're going to make her the main character, I would like it to be a new plot and not back to the same sort of plot of, oh, like, this person's going to throw me out and I'm going to have to find a new owner, or I'm not going to have a new owner again, or whatever. And I also thought it was weird that we spent so much time focusing on Emily, but then we never see her. Like, there's this, like, we learn that she names her daughter after Jessie, which is a crazy plot line, but we don't learn anything about her.
I expected it to be like, a cameo, like a neighbor or like, you know, but it was just a picture, just a, what is that called? A memory box or whatever, a time
I
capsule.
also think that so much of the genius of the original Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2, I think, was like, okay, these toys are small and they have to move when people aren't looking. Like, there's so much time spent in the first one of like how they're gonna get into the neighbor's house. Like, that's like the whole plot of the movie. And for this one, it's like they're traveling all over the place, like, and like they're driving cars. Like, nobody has any
She gets a
problem
real
getting around.
horse. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, which I think makes the movie less fun and less interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I liked the scene in the second one where it's like, how do we get across the street? Oh, we're all gonna get under these cones and we're gonna walk, and the traffic's gonna, like, that is such a fun scene. And in this, I think it just, yeah, it didn't have the same glow up. Can I say something
Okay, yeah,
controversial?
please.
I thought that Supergirl was a very fun movie that I liked a lot and was way better than Toy Story
Oh, look at
5.
that segue. We're nailing it, keeping us on track. That's funny because you're not a superhero person, but you are a DC superhero person, which is kind of
It's like I'm more of a DC person than a Marvel person. Famously, I haven't seen the theatrical releases of most of the DC movies. I only saw the
And
extended
you
version,
love them.
which were better. But this is James Gunn's re-envisioning of DC. We got the Superman movie last summer, which I think we both like. I think people generally liked
Like
that pretty
it,
well. And then Supergirl is
yeah.
the second movie in this, rebooted cinematic universe. I don't think it got a lot of attention. Supergirl's also sort of a weird character. It's like, I don't know that she has any cultural cachet other than people being like, oh, I guess she's the girl version of Superman. Like, I don't know anything about her lore. And she's also not in the Justice League. Like, Wonder Woman is the girl superhero in the Justice League, or one of them, I guess. Because there's also what, Hawk Woman, Hawk Girl,
I
whatever
don't
from
know.
the TV show.
Oh,
Anyways,
yeah.
but Supergirl, sort of, despite being a theoretically big DC movie, did not get that much marketing, and people were like, oh, like, no one's gonna go see this, it's gonna get a bad box office. Like, it was the stank was on this one from a while ago. And I went in and I really liked it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was entertaining. I liked a movie that's a superhero movie, like, sort of about a new character and giving us new backstory. I liked that I didn't have to know a ton of things about from like TV shows and whatever lore. Like, it felt like an easy movie to watch. I thought that the action scenes were good. I thought that the acting was good. I thought the characters were interesting. I liked that this movie had a lot of stakes. Like, the bad guys are really terrible people.
Nasty.
They're killing people. They're like kidnapping girls to make them their wives. Like, it felt like there was stakes to this in a way that the Marvel movies sometimes don't, or like Mandalorian Grogu, where it basically could have been PG. Like, nobody dies. Everyone sort of just like knocked over in a fight scene. I don't know. This movie has made no money and did not get good reviews, and I think sort of,
You're here
but
to
I'm here saying
rectify
maybe that's sexism, okay? Maybe
Okay,
people didn't like Supergirl because it had the word girl in the
so
title.
true. It was written by a woman, it was directed by a man who also directed I, Tonya and
Oh,
Cruella.
yes.
Two movies you also loved.
Did I?
But yeah, and it stars Supergirl is introduced in Superman, and people liked her.
Yes.
She's edgy. She's always like going off planet to get drunk because if she's on a red moon, then she doesn't have her powers and she can feel things and drink things and whatever. And she's depressed for not some unknown reason, but probably having to do with a complete decimation of her people and family. And so, yeah, this movie is very like bottled. It's very on its own. It's clearly inspired by John Wick.
Yes.
Dog gets injured, and she goes on a mission to get the antidote to save her dog, who again is a very cute dog, and I wish there'd been more of him, even though he's a CGI animal.
And poisoned.
And poisoned. But I do think I probably, as someone who has seen a lot of superhero stories, it does hit the same problems of something like Toy Story, where it's like, it's all very trope heavy. It's all very yes. predictable. It's all very like, oh, okay, we're going to get this needle drop in the slow-mo fight, and then she's going to show up and she'll be in her costume and the sun will rise behind her. And so it does like start to feel not only predictable, but sort of like soulless, like just kind of like we're taking her as a vehicle to get to the next movie, which they didn't like, you know, there's no credit scene. Like, it's not trying to tie into a larger universe at this point. But it did.
Well, other than Superman is in this a decent Superman. Amount.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's such a himbo, too. It's crazy how much of a dork he is, which is cute for Superman. I like him as Superman. Let the record show.
I do think that this movie, though, signals something about the larger superhero craze as a mm-hmm. whole, which mm-hmm. is that I think that we're sort of done with it. Not yeah. that there won't be more superhero movies, not that superhero movies like will not be successful. Obviously we have Spider-Man yeah. coming up. There's an Avengers movie, which I'm interested to see how that does in the grand scheme of things. But I think that we have just really milked the superhero genre yeah. to death. And we are not going to do, like, Avengers Endgame was a once in a lifetime thing. Yeah, and yeah. we're not building up to a second one of those. Like, yeah. I don't think people have the energy or the time. And we've already just seen so many mm-hmm. different iterations of a mm-hmm. superhero movie. And I think sort of like the Western, we need to like let it rest.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like maybe bring it back in a new sort of way in 10, 15 yeah. years. But I don't think we're going to get, you know, hundreds of Westerns ever again like we yeah. did at a period in the 50s or 60s or whatever. Yeah. It's like, I think the superhero genre is sort of done. Let's move on to whatever the next big mm-hmm. thing is and sort of work on that. Also, yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about this, but with the success of Project Hail Mary and Obsession mm-hmm. and Backrooms and Sinners, it's just like people want something that's different and something that's original.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we're sort of tired of like some mm-hmm. of this IP, like Mandalorian and Grogu did not do particularly well. I'm interested to see how the live action Moana does.
Oh my God. Looks terrible.
It looks terrible, but Moana 2 did really good, even yeah. did well in theaters. But you know, again, that's like a children's audience. Yeah. So I think there is a different rubric yeah. for gauging with that. But like this movie cost $186 million to make mm-hmm. and has only made $68 million globally. Like, it did very poorly in the box office.
Yeah. Well, which it's rough because it feels like a movie that if it had come out, like, with the original Thor, with the original Captain yes. America, like, it would have been a really well-loved, received film. But I also think, like I didn't like this movie as much as you, I think, but a big chunk of that is that the like technical aspect, while yes, they're pulling off these amazing stunts and whatever, there is something being robbed of it being so CGI heavy. Like
yeah.
every set, like it feels formulaic as a plot, but it also feels formulaic as like a background because every single shot is like, oh, brown sludge, that's every world. We won't have to think creatively or build anything or make it visually interesting. We're just going to plant her in front of a dirty building and call it good. And it's like, I mean, the first Thor, you get this like mystical, magical world with like a literal rainbow, rainbow bridge. Like, and there's no interest in like really capturing a unique world anymore. It's just, let's put these kids in front of a green screen and like whip something up that's easy to like blur in the background and it'll be kind of ugly and we'll call it gritty and no one will care. And well, it feels like unengaging.
You see something like Backrooms, which uses Seth's so well. And then you see something like Toy Story 5, which has really beautiful animation. Mm-hmm. And you do start to think, like, how come some of these movies are so bad looking? Because yeah. in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, like, even things that maybe weren't that interesting looking were mostly shot on location.
Yeah.
Just, like, out of necessity because you couldn't do as much visual effects. So, like, mm-hmm. if you wanted to do a weird planet, you had to drag everybody to, like, the mm-hmm. mountains or something. Mm-hmm. Or if you wanted to do a spaceship, you had to build it. Where yeah. now it's just everything is a green screen. Mm-hmm. And there were, I think, some, like, the planet that they're on sort of originally, like, the sort of mountainy planet, like, I think some of that was filmed on actual mountains,
but
then some of it was not, and you could tell the scenes where it was like, okay, this was filmed on a green screen that's supposed to look like this mountain, probably because you had to do reshoots or something. This is not the actual mountain. It just looks so bad.
Yeah, and it's like, like, okay, I recently rewatched The Mummy Returns, which is terrible graphics, but still at least there's something being tried. So you can, like, respect the effort. Or, like, even, you know, something like Star Wars 1. It's like, wow, the graphics weren't there yet. Like, the technique wasn't honed yet. Like, but at least they were envisioning something and trying to utilize what we have. But now it's like, we know what we have and we could spend the money, but we don't want to because we ran the numbers. And so we'll just do this, like, shitty job and, like, hope no one notices.
Nobody cares. Yeah.
And it's hard because, it doesn't have to be. I'm not, like, expecting every set to be, you know, made practically or whatever. But put some care into it, visually building something around this world you want us to invest in. Because, it's, and can we talk about, can we talk about the needle drop, though?
Which one? Or all of them?
The slow-mo fight. What was it? It was the slow-mo cover of...
It was a cover. I can't remember.
Okay, Supergirl needle drop.
I know what you're talking about because I was like, oh, this is a cover of, you know, Time After Time or whatever it was. I think that... Needle drops are
the middle weird. By Jimmy Eat World.
Oh yes.
Oh crazy. My god. Yeah, and they said that they tried like 45 songs and it was decided like in the last week before finalizing it. Terrible.
It's so funny because like 90s movies have great needle drops. Yeah. Or like when you're watching them, it's like The Parent Trap, the songs that are in those movies are like Parent Trap songs. Like, I cannot hear any of those songs out in the real world without thinking about The Parent Trap. Like, that's how ingrained in my mind they are, even though they are famous songs or were famous songs before that. I guess maybe it's because I watched that movie as well.
And it's like, okay, James Gunn loves a needle drop. There were lots of fun ones in Guardians, in Superman, and I think that's become a part of the genre. Like, you have Thor Ragnarok's big needle drop, Thunderstruck or whatever. But I think this one doesn't work. One, because the rest of the film tonally hasn't been as weird and zany as something like Superman. Mm-hmm. It's been more gritty and realistic. And two, there's no attachment to this song in this moment. Whereas something like Guardians, the character is obsessed with these old tapes. And so the needle drops make sense. But this was like out of left field. And she is not someone who would have been listening to Jimmy Eat World. One, because she was an alien on another planet at the time. But I don't think people are rediscovering that. I think that's a millennial song. And if you weren't there, it's not coming back up. So it was just kind of like, okay. Like, it made no sense. And it kind of,
I also just think people, like, want to use needle. Like, needle drops have sort of become, like, because they're such a thing, you notice them. It's not like you're watching the movie and the song is playing and you're like, oh, like, still in the movie. It's like the song starts and you're like, oh, they did this for a needle drop. Because I thought that a lot watching voicemails from Isabel as well, the Netflix rom-com that also has a lot of needle drops. And for songs that I like and also like songs that she, you know, that sort of fit the time period or the vibe of the film. But it was like, oh, every time they played one, I was sort of taken out of it a bit. and then was thinking about, oh, like they got the rights to this. This must have been expensive or whatever. Cause there's like, I think there's a couple, are there a couple Taylor Swift ones in there? Like, there's different things.
And that's me watching Love Island. I'm like, what is their music budget at this point?
Is Love Island using Taylor Swift songs?
Love Island is using like every single major song, you know, every single top 40 hit. There's a, there's like at least three every episode.
That's crazy because I mean, I don't, I'm not watching Love Island, but I would have assumed that Love Island would have used the Real Housewives song where they're like, it's a land on the island or whatever, you know, like some like AI, like
no, fake it's song. Like Apple Roan, it's Olivia Dean, it's like, I don't know. I don't think I've heard Taylor Swift or like Charlie XCX, but it's still like top 40 music. Like,
wait, Benson that's Food, crazy. You know? How is Love Island?
It's terrible. I'm not cut out for
Have
it.
Have you watched it before?
No.
This is
no,
your first go around?
Yeah. And I hear it's a terrible season to start. But I don't see, like, I think it just depresses me in a way that I'm already like, I have no hope for the future, you know, but like watching these 20-year-olds fail to communicate in any meaningful way.
Well, don't they get kind of trashy people, no offense, for
I'm
like
sure.
Isn't that whole the whole part of it,
it's just the amount of times of,
like,
that
messy,
they
like party
they're
animal.
Like they're like bro like low key bro, like I don't know man, I just am like in my feels bro, and I'm just like I'm seeing too many ass cheeks for not enough like emotional cognitive stimulation, you know.
I really
more in my
I'm like I really would love a dating show that is just like actual dates, like watching people like date in the real world.
They've tried that. There's been a few shows like that that I've watched, but they never take off because we crave mess in our reality TV.
I guess so. I don't, I'm like, I just find people like so fascinating. And I feel like you're like, everybody wants to watch someone fall in love. Like, I think that is such a fun experience, especially like when that has happened on reality TV or like Boston Rob and Amber. It's like people go back and watch that season because it's like, oh, this is like watching two people who were meant to be together realize that in real time.
That's cute.
But I think with something like The Bachelor, that doesn't happen because it's not actually like a real dating situation. Like the why that works on Survivor is because like they're trapped together for 40 days. And so over the course of that time, they like recognize their feelings. Whereas,
well, and I'll assume they were adults. They were fully, their brains were fully developed at that point. These are like, someone came out and was like, I'm 21. I'm still in college. I was like, oh, I shouldn't be watching this. I'm like full tits, full ass out. Like, what are you doing here? And I'm clutching my pearls. It's rough. Anyways, it's rough. So yeah,
back to Supergirl story five. I'm like, we're using needle drops. Mm-hmm. I like Millie Alcott, the girl who plays Supergirl. Yeah. She was on House of the Dragon briefly as the young version of the one of the two main characters. So she was in like the first five episodes or something, maybe like
She's good. And you know what? Like, speaking of Westerns, this is very clearly, like, I think they've admitted, like, it's inspired by True Grit in that there's this hardened, you know, crushed, soulless, older person who's forced to take on this young, naive, earnest, justice-seeking girl.
Yeah.
And their dynamic is fun. I don't think my question with this film, because a lot of it was like, you can't kill him, it'll ruin you. I'm like, this bitch is a child murdering rapist. Like, I think we're okay to like wipe him off the planet. Is that controversial? I don't know.
Like, but the logic was sort of like, you don't kill him, I'll kill him. Like,
literally.
Like, I do think that there was a certain degree of like, you don't need to take this on. Like, you can, like, I will kill this person for you. Right. I will absorb that trauma. And then you can, you know, go out into the world and do your thing. You don't have to let your whole life be governed by, like, revenge and the past in the way that Supergirl was, because her family, because her planet was destroyed. But yeah, it was a little bit like, well, if she wants to kill the person, like, and he is terrible, I don't know that that's a problem. It wasn't like this guy, like, accidentally killed her family in a car crash or something, and she was out for revenge. Like, I think that you could kill someone who, like, was a child murdering rapist and sort of be fine about that.
Well, and it's like, I get the first speech, but, like, to stop her from killing him when he's literally about to kill another young girl, it's like, well, I think you've lost the plot there. Like, I think she could have followed through on that and been okay. Like, that's arguably self-defense at that point. But no, that was my question. And then, again, I think, I'm sure there's lots of lore around this within the comics, which I'm not a part of, and full respect to them. Anyone who loves it, I mean, I will sound ignorant probably. But in this movie, as it's presented, she's sad because her family and her entire people are dead, which I get.
Yes.
But trying to frame it as, like, parallel to this girl whose family was murdered in cold blood, whereas the planet just kind of fell apart, right? Like, it wasn't like someone attacked it. It wasn't like Star Trek or Star Wars where they, like, pushed a button and the world imploded. It was like the planet's core failed. They knew that. They were able to rescue a certain part of the world, but then it turned out kryptonite was in the water, and so everyone was, like, dying a radioactive death.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I mean, I don't think you're seeking revenge in the same way, because there's not, like, an actual perpetrator of violence. It's just, like, bad luck.
Yeah, I guess she sees, like, the good in the girl and is like, oh, like, I remember that I used to have that, and now I'm sort of this bitter person, and if I can try to protect you from that, I will. But it was a little bit like, these aren't exactly the parallel situations here.
Yeah.
And
she starts her story by saying, like, oh, God wasn't merciful enough to destroy my planet in one day. And it's like, well, yeah, that's lucky. Like, congrats. Like, you guys. And also, not to get into the nitty gritty, but why didn't they just go to a different planet? Migrate, you know?
Yeah, I don't.
I had questions about that, about that journey.
I don't know enough to be able to answer that question.
Yeah. I'm like, give me Titan AE. Like, why aren't you guys floating somewhere else? Like, were they still, was it a ship bubble?
I did have a lot of questions, because then it's also like, okay, well, then Superman is, like, jettisoned and he's waiting there, but then he's not. Like, there was a lot of world building questions that, again, probably make sense in the comics, but don't make sense in the movie.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah. Still. It wasn't the worst film.
No.
The greatest.
I mean, it reminded me a little bit, and maybe this is just, like, sexism on my part, but of the, like, the second Captain Marvel movie, which I think we both also thought wasn't bad, but, like, made no money and was sort of, like, the worst performing Marvel movie ever. And it does feel, to a certain degree, like, if it's going to be a female-led project, because this fan base is so male focused, it really has to be someone who, like, either a character that's super iconic, or it, like, is really necessary for them to watch.
Really well written, like Wonder Woman, like the first one. Like, everyone loved that because it was such a unique, well crafted story.
Well, and Wonder Woman's obviously a significantly more iconic character.
Yeah.
And also, I do think that Wonder Woman, because it was being played by Gal Gadot, whose vibe up until that point was like, and she's just crazy hot. Like, like, was something that appealed to the creepy male audience. You know what I mean? Like, if
that's fair.
If you got, like, post Transformers Megan Fox to be a superhero in a movie, I think that men would have showed up to that and not really cared in the same way. If you got, you know, Brie Larson to be in a Marvel movie and, you know, she's not sort of like sex kitten energy. And I don't think that Millie Alcott is somebody who the fans are like, yeah, like she is. She's so hot. I got to go watch her play Supergirl. Also, I think it's hard to really sexualize someone with the word girl in their title. You know, it doesn't sell the same way.
Yeah, I know. She did have her skirt wasn't as mini as Wonder Woman in Justice League. So
I know. Yes.
Someone was paying attention. Gave her shorts under the skirt too.
And her suit is like full bodied. It's not like a corset, which Wonder Woman's is. It's like boobs up.
Yeah.
Push up bra, locked and loaded.
Yeah.
What do we think this signals for James Gunn's DCU?
I mean, compared to other DC vehicles, it's still better, right?
I mean, not money-making wise.
Well, yeah.
But like, I think, it's gotten good response otherwise, but there's a movie called Clayface that's the next one that comes out in October of this year. But that's a Mike Flanagan movie, so that'll be interesting as well. And then there's Man of Tomorrow, which I think is the next Superman movie that comes out July of next year. But there's three other ones, including a Wonder Woman film, that are all sort of scheduled. And the Wonder Woman film is written by the same person who wrote this. So I think it'll be interesting to see if they continue on or if DC is a little bit like, you know.
I don't know. I can't imagine a world where they don't just keep trying, because, like, what else are they going to do?
But these movies are expensive to make.
I know.
Like, with Star Wars, which feels like a property that you would never quit making movies on, they sort of did, and then Mandalorian and Grogu didn't do very well. So, I feel like that Disney, at least, is kind of like, what are we doing here? And there are a decent number of Marvel movies, like, in the pipeline, but not a ton.
Yeah.
I think it's just, like, Spider-Man and the two Avengers that are, like, kind of locked and loaded. And there's a couple of other ones, you know, like another Black Panther movie or whatever, that are, like, on the fringes. But,
yeah,
I don't know. Superhero exhaustion is coming. I feel like it might be more likely that we get a sequel to, like, Sinners somehow or another.
Probably. Yeah.
But
I mean, and now we get Spider-Man's coming out, Odyssey.
Yes. Spider-Man, The Odyssey, the new Minions movie, famously. Moana live action.
Oh, dear Lord.
We've got, the
mix of original and franchise, I guess. Mostly franchise.
July does not have very much going for it. We have the Minions movie, Moana, The Odyssey, and Spider-Man. And basically everything else was like, we're like not going to try to compete with those. Like, bye. There's not a lot of movies coming out.
Makes sense.
Which means that it is prime time for us to do our top 10 movies of the year so far countdowns.
Yes. I'm excited. Though I feel like we'll have like the same.
I don't know, because I feel like the last couple of years there was a movie that came out in the first half where I was like, yes, like that, like with Challengers or Everything Everywhere All at Once or Sinners, where I was like, this is like one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. Like, it will be my top movie of the year. This year has had some good movies, but I don't think anything that is nearly reaching that caliber. So I feel like we might have differing tastes a bit.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm excited for that.
Obviously, you love The Bride so much. Yeah, yeah. And we're like The Bride, best movie ever.
Mary Shelley.
I never saw that because it left theaters so quickly.
Wait, really?
I tried to see it when I got back to New York and it was gone. No. They had erased it.
Who's there? Mary. Mary who? I say that a lot still. So yeah, that's cachet. A good knock knock joke we've been waiting for. Okay, I've got to go. We got to wrap this up.
Yes. Okay. Well, this has been a lovely episode talking about iPads and and Supergirls.
Yeah.
Who knows? We might be talking about them again next week because we are doing our top 10 movies of the year so far.
A little preview.
Yep. Supergirl number one, Toy Story 5, number two. Yeah. But thanks everyone for listening. We will be back next week with another episode. And yeah, it's really the countdown for The Odyssey, which I think is the most anticipated movie of the year. And I'm excited to talk about that in a couple of weeks when it comes out as well.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. But thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.